What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to a Monday Memorial Day for the Motor City Metrics podcast. Before we get the podcast started, we did get another donation from Bloodright. Thank you so much to sponsor of the podcast, Bloodright. I don't have the soundboard, so
exquisite.
Yeah, there we go. Awesome. But yes, back on a Monday night. And yes, we want to talk about the White Sox series and then talk about the Rangers series and kind of look forward to what we can see from the Tigers. So yeah, guys, what are you guys thinking about that White Sox series? What was your takeaways?
They got 3 out of 4. You can't ask for a whole lot more than that in this game. They actually got to Dylan Cease for a change, which is the first time they ever scored more than 3 runs against him in his 14 starts against the Tigers. He came into that game with a 1.0 ERA over his last 8 starts against Detroit. So that was fun to see. Overall, yeah, it was just a great weekend of baseball. The Tigers got people excited about possibly moving into first place. They won some thrilling comeback games. As far as baseball weekends go, that was one of the better ones around these parts in a couple of years anyway.
Yeah, I think the manner in which they won the games was heartening, right? They, a couple times, the bullpen has been so reliable all year long, and then they had a couple hiccups. Some of it was just bad timing, but both times, it didn't really feel like they were out of it, and sure enough, they weren't. And there's something in particular about when it's the young players who are the ones contributing, the guys that everybody had kind of had their hopes hanging on anyway. When they do it, you go, okay, this feels even better. There's promise, right? Because Riley Green's going to be around here for a while. Torkelson, yes. And Badu and those guys, when they're producing, it feels better than when it's Andy Ibañez, which might not be fair to Andy Ibañez, but whatever. He's 30 and probably playing his way off the team, to be truthful. But yeah, and you know, you got the added bonus of taking down a division rival, 3 out of 4. So it was pretty darn good weekend for baseball in the Motor City.
Yeah, I saw a stat. What really stuck out to me was the walks the Tigers are drawing. I think they drew like 30 walks against the White Sox or something ridiculous like that. And they were showing graphics on the game today. And it's like they've drawn like 20-something more walks than the next closest team. It's incredible. And this is a fairly similar roster than last year. And just, is it the coaching staff? Can we give credit to that? Like, how are they made such a big adjustment?
Yeah, I think you have to give a small amount of credit to the other team's pitching. And Dylan Cease is not the Dylan Cease he was last year. But the Tigers are taking, just top to bottom of the lineup, they're taking a lot more pitches. They're confidently taking a lot more close pitches. And you have to think that there's something coming down from on high. Scott Harris's thing that everybody talks about was controlling or dominating the strike zone. Having that filter down through, they have 3 new hitting coaches this year. And you just see it across the board. Even Javi Baez, I think we talked about last night, has the 2nd or 3rd lowest strikeout rate on the team. He's not walking anymore. He's not striking out as much as he used to. He's also not hitting for any power, which is an issue. But you go up there and basically when McKinstry, Green, Torkelson and Badu, at the very least, and you could throw Maton in there too, right? Those guys are off at the plate. They're going to give you a really good plate appearance. They might not, you know, what eventually happens varies based on who was there, but that's got to be really tough for opposing pitchers. They're making them work for every strike, and that's been fun. This is not the sort of Tigers offense we've seen in years past.
Yes, and was like you just thank you to Josh Newman in the chat with the $2 donation. You wanna get that one, Chris?
Yeah, Josh. Oh, touch them all time.
Okay. All right. What were you gonna say, Hubert?
Oh, I was saying, you know, it has been very interesting to watch the evolution of this because it didn't seem this way early in the season. This is something that's really come about in the month of May. So now, obviously, will it continue going forward? Is this an aberration? Is this just a 3-week stretch? Or is this something we see and does it become even more team-wide? Jonathan Scope start taking walks and we'll know. But it'd be also interesting to know, is this filtering down through the whole organization too? But that's going to be something everybody gets to watch, especially on the minor league side of the podcast. Is that something that's going to filter on through down to A-ball even?
Yeah, and a couple guys in particular we wanted to cover. We've already touched them a little bit. Do the Tigers have more than one All-Star in their lineup right now? That's a question that kind of I thought of, and I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that.
In the lineup or on the team?
In the lineup, because on the team, I think we could agree they have multiple all-stars, but offensively, there's two guys I'm looking at in particular that have been really good for them.
I think if Riley Green has the name recognition from his draft status and so on, prospect status, if he continues to hit well over 300 each month, knock in some runs, make some great plays like in the outfield like he did yesterday, sure, he could possibly latch a spot. And then I think the other one would be Lang if he continues to be dominating. The Tigers know how to put a closer in the All-Star game. He got a lot of experience with that. Other than that, if you want to talk about McKinstry and a few others, possibly, but I would be a little surprised if it stretched much past Green and Lang.
Yeah, All-Star stuff is always vague. The Tigers fans might get crazy and start voting everybody in, like the Royals did years back. But in terms of who deserves it, I mean, it's tough when you're an outfielder like Riley Green, because you got to deal with Aaron Judge and Mike Trout and whoever else
Ohtani.
Out there. Ohtani, although you would think he, I don't know, if he goes in as an outfielder, as a pitcher or whatever, two-way player. But yeah, I think I'm checking right now. I think purely on merit, Riley Green probably does deserve it, or he's close enough. Probably one of the top five or six outfielders in the American League WAR. I'm trying to check now. But I'm operating right now really under the assumption that the Tigers are going to end up with Alex Lang. And maybe Eduardo Rodriguez, and that's it. As much as we'd like to see Green and McKinstry even make the team, if they had a utility spot, McKinstry would be a great fit for it, I think.
Yeah, I think the moral of that story is that even though they might not make the team, they've been playing like all-stars, and that's what matters in McKinstry and Green. But yeah, and even Torkelson, I think he's putting together solid at-bats as well. Zach Schreiber, what do you guys make of the infield right now? I think it's really interesting to see Ibanez, how up and down he's been. Zach Short has got some big hits, but even Scope's come on a little bit. Do you think we start to see more of Jonathan Scope as the summer comes along? And then what do you think they're going to do with Ibanez? And you think Short continues to get playing time as well?
If Short keeps flashing some power, he's going to play. He's got to. If Andy Ibanez is going to go 2 for 35 and Short is chipping in with the timely home run or pinch hit or whatever, he's going to play some, and he's earning it right now. I think that everybody wants certain guys DFA'd. We hear that daily. There's a drumbeat on Twitter for it. At some point, Ibanez, if he's 2 for 52, then yeah, they're probably going to have to do something. They probably can't let him out on a limb that long. But the rest of the infield, Baez is going to be Baez. He's going to be up and down. I'm sure he'll have another 2-week hot stretch here where he looks like the second coming. And then he'll revert to where he's always been. And then I'm enjoying watching Torkelson take the walks. He didn't hit the ball today. You know, you can see the at-bats getting better and his confidence of taking pitches getting higher and higher.
Yeah, Tork's doing fine. He's taking, like you've said, he's taking a lot of walks, really good at-bats. He's hitting the ball hard, but still not the over-the-fence power that the team really needs. But
true.
The alternative is what he was last year and what he was the first month of the season, and this is much better. So that's good. Yeah, I think Ibanez will probably head down to Toledo after Carpenter is ready to come back. But how they configure everything, I don't know. But I would think the way that Zach Short's playing right now, he would stay ahead of Ibanez. And then, yeah, I don't know. I think in the ideal world, they'd like to have Baton or playing up to his potential, but that hasn't happened this year, and his playing time has been diminished. The infield is a big question, and that's where people start poking around at the minor leagues. You're going, hey, what about this guy? What about that guy? It's got to slow our roll a little bit, I think.
Yeah. Mr. Raj, we were talking about the White Sox series. Any thoughts you had on that series before we move on?
Yeah, first and foremost, I'm sorry that I was late. I've had a migraine seasonal allergy thing that has just literally kept me on the couch all day, and so it took me a while before I actually got off the couch. And yeah, my Memorial Day was not that memorable. And I was supposed to still have to do a lot of stuff for the minor league podcast from yesterday and all that stuff, but I'll get it done tomorrow. But yeah, just finally got going and I had to wake up and I didn't want to be on camera with my eyes all swollen and just, ugh. Anyway, one of my thoughts about the White Sox series, I think they took advantage of a bad team. They took advantage of the Sox, a bad bullpen. and they really were able to flex that quite a bit. And in addition to that, we saw what Zach McKinstry is, which has been a pretty effective hitter. And they did what they were supposed to. They beat Chicago, but the only thing I was worried about was Will Vest's performance a little bit. Again, I'm trying to be not to be nitpicky, but there's certain things you have to be concerned with. Akil Badu continuing to show that he belongs in the lineup. That's one of my biggest takeaway from the series. And coming into today's game against Texas, there's a reason why they're on the good, bad, and the ugly, because they are a team to be. They beat Baltimore, and that's no easy task either. And today they showed why. There's not a weak spot in that lineup. And so I think that the White Sox series coming up after this in Chicago might be the easiest series that Detroit has all of June.
Wow. Yeah. And the interesting thing is Chicago came into the Tigers series on a little bit of a roll. They've been playing better. The Tigers really squashed that, which was nice to see. I mean, the White Sox bullpen had done, 29 innings along three runs, and Detroit got to them, especially Joe Kelly, which really surprised me. I had no confidence they were going to get to Joe Kelly, and they slapped him around pretty well.
By the way, somebody asked, the Giants hat. I got to give a shout out to Matt on our Discord channel, who went to Japan, and he went by himself. He didn't go for work or anything. And I asked him if he could get me a Giants hat, and he said he could, no problem. And he got Chris a shirt. So this is my first non-minor league. Actually, it's my second international hat. I have a Havana Leones hat, which was the original Cuban league from 1956, I want to say. So
nice.
Anyway, sorry. Continue on.
I was just going to say, you watch Joe Kelly pitch and you wonder how anybody ever hits him. He's like up to 101, 102. He's got a 93 mile an hour slider and like a 90 mile an hour knuckle curve. You're like, how does this guy ever give up outs? And I look at his ERA is 4. It's what's going on? Because his expected ERA is like under 2. So that was nice to see the Tigers get to him, because he's always been kind of a little bit of a, he's got a lot of gifts online for making faces. So that's always good.
Yeah. I think in game 4, it was really Riley Green that got to him with that triple, and then Baez with the little tapper. But yeah, game 4 to me was like the Riley Green game, obviously taking back the home run, taking a run away from them. And then in the 9th inning, I'm not going to say he single-handedly won them the game, but he was obviously probably the main driving force behind that.
And so you know what else? What else? McKinstry's homer against him, that was a laser. He had a good pitch. That was a hell of a swing McKinstry put on that homer versus Kelly.
Speaking of Riley Green, by the way, somebody was asking, he gets national recognition to make his first All-Star game this year. I'm doing an article about that now because, interesting enough, the amount of Tigers, the last Tiger outfielder that was a homegrown prospect, if you will, that made the All-Star team was back in 2009 with Curtis Granderson. And before that, you're going to find this hard to believe, but Robert Fick in 2002. So Robert Fick, it's a strange company to be involved in as far as, and then it goes back a little further. So you're thinking about maybe Kirk Gibson, Steve Kemp before. So Steve Kemp in 1979, before Robert Fick in 2002, was the last Tiger outfielder to make the All-Star. So I think Riley Green has made his case, but I just thought I was looking that up earlier for an article I'm doing. I was just blown away that in terms of homegrown talent, if you will, Demetri Young was another outfielder that made it. 2003, but of course,
does Fick count as homegrown because he came from the Astros?
I thought Fick was drafted here.
I don't think so. I think they got him from the Astros in a trade.
I'm pretty sure. I thought Robert Fick was homegrown. Let me double check that, but I'm pretty sure Robert Fick was a draft pick because they were talking about him.
Could be wrong, but I thought he came in a trade.
Yep, he was drafted by the Tigers twice, in the 43rd round in the 1995 draft out of high school, and then again in the 5th round in the 96 draft.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking of Mitch Molusky.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, Robert Fick was, when they did that whole thing on UPN 50, when Tigers last game at Comerica Park, Tiger Stadium, they're talking about the future. Robert Fick was among one of those players they took the home plate over to Comerica Park.
Didn't we discover that Fick's brother was the catcher in the Naked Gun?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Which is outstanding. Wow. Which is, for some reason, the movie that plays on MLB Network the most, which is fine with me. I love the Naked Gun, but it's so weird to have this baseball channel and you turn it on Sunday night and it's like, hey, you guys could play a replay of a baseball game, but okay, Naked Gun. Again, we'll do it. But just to finish off the Riley Green thing, we mentioned earlier, I checked. He is now currently tied for fifth in the American League in WAR at 1.8 behind Aaron Judge, Randy Rosarena, Jordan Alvarez, and Mike Trout. And he's tied with Luis Robert and Cedric Mullins. So he's up near the top on merit. You could argue.
Pretty fair group of names there.
If he keeps playing the way he has been, he probably will pass a couple more of those guys. So, yeah. It's just a question of, will anybody pay attention to the national level? And I don't know. It's hard to, I don't know if anybody paid attention to anybody on the national level anymore.
Yeah. We did have a comment from Noah Conley, a loyal listener. He said he had leg surgery on last Thursday for a fractured fibula. We wish him best of luck in his recovery process.
Speedy
recovery. How did that happen? I'm always curious about how these injuries happen.
Oh, he'll probably tell us, or he might That's make up thing. A story or something.
Yeah, I had something really good.
I had a buddy of mine who actually broke his leg bowling. I was telling Chris that week. I'm dead serious. He said he slipped and it caused him to break his leg. I don't know to this day how he was doing it, but when I was telling him bowling, I was like, make sure you don't break your leg. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I totally forgot that he broke his leg.
Basketball. Yeah.
That makes sense. You guys have any stories of breaking a bone in a dumb way? Because I do.
Well, I do too as well, but go
ahead. Let's hear it.
I was on the monkey bars. This is how I was in first grade. On the monkey bars. No, listen.
Okay.
My mom was always emphasizing that after your dinner, wash your hands and dry your hands. And I was so eager to go back outside. I washed my hands. My hands were still wet. Jumped on the monkey bars. Slipped. My hand landed right on the rock. And I broke my wrist. Mm. And the whole entire time I went to Spain, family, I was in a cast the whole time. So that was a pretty stupid. Had I dried my hands, I would have broken my wrist.
All right. Let's hear it. People in the chat, let's hear your stories. And then, Chris, what can you top that one?
You guys don't have good ones?
I have a couple.
Not really.
We used to, when I was in high school, there was a local arcade we would go to for fun every on the weekend. It's kind of the spot where people hang out. And they had one of those boxing machines. We punch it as hard as you can to see how hard you can punch. And I was like, I don't need this glove. I'm going to punch it with my bare hands. I'll punch harder that way. And immediately broke my hand. I punched it. I was like, oh, that's no good. And I went to the doctor. They're like, yeah, this is called a boxer's fracture because people who throw punches break their hand exactly like that.
Yeah.
Maybe use the boxing glove again.
Yeah. Mine aren't that exciting. I was on the top of the monkey bars, like, and I got pushed off and I broke my leg.
Got pushed off.
That sounds exciting to me. You got an assassin in your school.
I was in my backyard, actually.
No, at home, an assassin.
Yeah, and then when I played football, I tackled my friend. He landed on my arm, and I fractured.
Ah, that sounds bad.
Yeah, but I haven't broken any since, like, that was fourth grade, so I've been good since then. But yeah, if we want to talk about the race in the Central, that's what I wanted to go towards. What are your guys' kind of thoughts on that? How do we match up with Minnesota, and is that a real race right now in the division?
Obviously, the records are what the records are. So, yes, at the current time, it is. The Twins did win today in comeback fashion. They got Royce Lewis back today. Hit a three-run homer, knocked in a fourth run as well. So they got a nice little boost from a really talented guy. But I think we might as well enjoy it while they're there. I think the Tigers aren't a whole lot worse than the Twins. They can make a run at them. The Twins have probably the better starting pitching, and that could be the difference. But earlier this week, I tweeted about the 2018 Tigers. I don't know if you guys saw that. You know, that team, a lot like this team. Early in the year, they were trying to get to 500. They were oh so close. They just couldn't quite do it. They were 2.5 games out of first place on June 17th. They were 36-37. And a lot of guys that I know very well who are really devoted, smart fans were saying, I love this team. I love this, how they're playing. They're playing with guts and pride and heart and the whole deal. And, of course, they finished 64-90. Where is this team going to go? I don't know, but I think we should enjoy it while they're there.
Yeah, I'm with in the same boat as you, Per. I love to, as far as the rest of June is a brutal month. Talked about this yesterday on the Minor League Podcast. the schedule is not favorable for the Tigers, and they have to really, if they can navigate that somewhat close to 500, then I would get a little more excited. But the one thing about the Twins that I really, you gotta have a couple guys that are just extraordinary talented and just guys that are very, they can make a big difference. And if they rest them, and that is one of them being Brian Buxton. If Buxton stays healthy, he's always been this is a guy who is a pain in the ass. He's always going to be that way. Sonny Gray is is back at having sort of a renaissance. Wow.
There you go.
I don't know why I could not say that word. I guess maybe it's just a migraine thing, but the Joe Ryan, they have a lot of guys that can really go out there and pitch. And not to mention too, one of the things about Minnesota that if they can get some consistency, in terms of back end of the bullpen too, they have one of the best guys in the game. Duran is just 102 without even trying. And so I think if Minnesota can strengthen their bullpen, I think Minnesota's bullpen is about even with the exception of Duran. But I just think it really depends on how the Tigers navigate June, because June's such a brutal month again.
Yeah.
And it's going to really test their pitching.
I got the numbers on that. After today, starting tomorrow, 19 of their next 28 games are against teams that are currently above 500. 16 of those 19 games are against teams that are currently in first place in their divisions. So, yeah, the upcoming schedule could get dicey. But if they can play, I don't know, of these next 20, let's say they go 13 and 15, that sounds like actually a pretty good stretch of baseball.
Yeah. And I mean, in terms of Minnesota, I think they have the much better pitching. They're second in baseball right now in team ERA at 3.44. I just think their offense is a bit get going. Carlos Correa needs to be the player they paid him to be. And I still think with the Tigers, I had them as 75 wins. I still think they'll get there. But yeah, I think they're going to tail off a little bit. I do still expect them to be sellers. I think they should be sellers just for the overall long-term health of this franchise. I think they have some assets that they can move and get some, really revamp this farm system and get some reinforcements coming in the future. Yeah, I think this is Minnesota's division to lose. And I wouldn't be surprised if Cleveland goes on a bit of a run as well. And maybe them and the Tigers could fight for third place in this division. But yeah, I don't necessarily think it's a true race for the Central right now.
I just view, I don't know, I think the White Sox still have more talent than the Tigers, and I think the Twins have more talent than the Tigers. The White Sox are just a jumbled mess that doesn't fit together. The Tigers are playing really well together right now, but I think the Twins, you mentioned it, they've got they're too young. They're basically their equivalent of Torkelson and Green. They got them back this year in Kirilloff and Lewis, and they've both been productive. So that lengthens the lineup. And one of the interesting things, if you look at the stats right now, as a team, the Twins and the Tigers are both hitting .230 as a team. I think the Twins have a 9.4% walk rate. The Tigers have a 9.3% walk rate. They're almost identical offensively, except the Twins have 30 more home runs than the Tigers.
Yeah.
And picture the way the Tigers have been playing, then add 30 home runs, and that's the offense you're going to see. And yeah, the pitching is more talented. It's at some point, we're trying to stay afloat, I think the Tigers are, until Scooble comes back and maybe Turnbull and Manning, and then they've got maybe a little bit more upside on the mound. But it's tough when you got Matthew Boyd going every fifth day, and he pitched fairly well today, except for it just seems like he tires around that fifth inning and two kind of inexplicable walks and then a hanging curveball, and then the game's basically over. So it's tough when you have him going, when you have Wentz not pitching up to his potential, and it then you got to just hope that the rest of the week, Fido is on, and Erod and Lorenzen continue to pitch well. So it's not a great place to be right now for the Tigers. You need a little bit more help, I think, in the rotation.
I was really surprised Hinch brought Boyd back out for the seventh. You'd gotten a quality start from him, even though it's on the outer qualifier of six innings, three runs. I don't know why. Even if his pitch count is low, I get that, but boy, he's gotten through the order twice. He's starting that third time through. And why do you want to start a rally in the seventh and put that in play? So that was very questionable to me today. Yeah, Boyd was acceptable today. He wasn't great, but he got by. The offense just had no answers for Eovaldi and no power at all.
And we've seen what people have been complaining about lately, right? Is they had the bases loaded with nobody out and didn't get a run out of it. And that's just, it's endlessly frustrating because we've seen that this offense can grab and claw. They're down by a couple runs, but it's tough when you're blowing golden opportunities like that every game. And I don't know what you do about that. We talked about it before. Like, I feel like that's eventually going to even out if you keep getting guys on base. But it's super frustrating right now to see it happen over and over again.
I will say I like what Aberdeen Blade said in the chat, which is I think the Tigers will and should take a similar approach to the Wings this season. Competitive up to the trade deadline and then sell and preserve your core. And I think that's what's going to happen. Just based off what I've been hearing too as well, the Tigers are not going to do anything rash. They're going to wait till the last possible minute to make a trade. And that's probably the right approach, because at that point, you know exactly what you'll have in Cole Keith and some of your prospects too as well. The draft will have taken place. And so you'll have a better idea of what the farm system may look like too. Because if they did something now, I just don't think you can continue to stretch the waiver wire, which is what they're doing anyways. I mean, the Tigers are as active on the waiver wire as a single guy on Tinder or whatever. I don't know. That was a bad analogy. But my point is, the Tigers they're swiping left a lot. The point I'm trying to make is that, it's simply put, they have to really, I think they have to stay put really and just, and they will, because they're going to continue to see what they have among their team. And so if we see, for example, people are always talking about having Justin Henry Molloy up here. He's had a really bad month in May in Toledo. At some point, though, in late June, July, then you'll see another, probably a good idea of what they'll bring up at some point.
Yeah. And I did see a comment from Sean Michael. He said, trade deadline will dictate who wins this division. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that for the Tigers' sake, because I know we talked about this on the last pod, but I don't really know if there's a win now trade that the Tigers could make to really push them to win this division. I just don't think that player's out there. I think they need multiple players to really push this team to be a true playoff contender. So I don't think it would even make sense for the Tigers to really make a win now trade at the deadline.
Now, somebody had mentioned, I think there's a Ken Rosenthal article about the Reds, you know, what now that Ellie De La Cruz is close to the big leagues and they've got Matt McClain up, like, maybe they trade Jonathan India. Somebody mentioned that. It's okay. That would be intriguing for the Tigers. I'm sure they'd be interested. But what do you have to give up to get Jonathan India? Is it Cole Keith? Is it Matt Manning and Cole Keith? Is it Gil Badu and Matt Manning? What do you have to do? So I don't know if they're in the business of trading for anybody like that, but there may be some bats out there. You never know. Also, why would the Reds give it to him? I don't know. They just find a different spot for guys who connect to play. But who knows?
Yeah, there doesn't seem like a lot of teams that are really going to be rebuilding or selling at the deadline. But yeah, Tyler Matson had a question I think is interesting. Who would you guys define as the core at the major league level right now? I think that's an interesting kind of thought experiment.
I'm going to say, of course, Riley Green, Spencer Torkelson, and probably Akil Badu. I think the Tigers are really thinking highly of him as far as that goes. In terms of a pitching side of things, Derek Skubal is part of that equation. Whether or not Casey Mize is healthy is another part of that, but you put them in there too, as long as with the Matt Manning, that's who I would consider the quote unquote core.
McKinstry?
Again, it's too early to say. I want to see a full season before I can say he's quote unquote part of the core. He is a good part of what they're doing right now. But again, the way that Scott Harris has been done things before, you could flip him. Who knows?
Yep. I'd put McKinstry in the core right now, just by the way he's been playing, and he seems like an ideal leadoff hitter. Just turned 28. I think he's got 4 or 5 years of team control left, so there I think would be no rush to trade him, unless, yeah, he's playing like this, and you're like, okay, maybe we can get something for him, but...
The reason why I don't put him in the conversation is because I have no merit of history what Scott Harris has done with quote-unquote cores. I mean, there's... In San Francisco, there was somewhat of a core, but it wasn't really... Even with the Cubs, to a certain extent, there was a core of players that were drafted through. But San Francisco, in the case of San Francisco, same thing. It was a few guys. But I don't know. Why don't put them in there? Because I just don't have enough history to say and go, okay, this is what they've done before.
It also depends on how you define the core.
Yeah.
I think Tigers fans want Green and Torkelson to be that center of the team for a decade plus, right? These are the guys that are going to be Tigers. if they play up to their abilities, they're going to get numbers on the wall and statues one day, that kind of core. And what was interesting about Harris's run with the Giants is that there was already a core in place. They just had all gotten old, and then suddenly they all got good again with Crawford and Posey and Longoria, and all those guys were randomly good, Brandon Belt. And then they brought in all these supplementary pieces who really helped. But there wasn't like a young core that they were building around at that point. I don't know. I'd like to think Scooble and maybe Mize eventually and those Green and Torkelson. But yeah, I don't know. I would also not. There are very few players on the organization that I wouldn't consider trading right now. It's basically Green, I think. I think there's a price for everybody else.
I think if you're taking in terms of I'm trying to think of the old wrestling WWE, everyone's got a price. That was Teddy DiBiase?
Yeah,
Teddy DiBiase. Everyone's got a price.
$1 million man.
And Virgil.
And Sean, look. Sean, again, you're trying to point in Kerry Carpenter. You know why I haven't put Kerry Carpenter on there, Sean? Because I haven't seen a full season of him yet. That's why.
He hasn't looked great. He's rehabbing right now, Toledo, so you're not expecting much. He's getting some at-bats. He hasn't looked great yet. There's a lot of strikeouts, but...
Exactly.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
He struggles in the outfield, too.
Yeah, he's getting better, but it's... Yeah, there's... How many big league games do we have from Kerry Carpenter? 50? Is it that many?
I think it's... Yeah, I think...
Yeah, it's just tough to... You know, if he plays up to his potential, then yeah, that could be he's four piece. But then, I don't know. Again, like, how do we define a core? What kind of core do we want? I'm just thinking of guys who are going to play up for this team for the next 2-3 years. So I would throw Carpenter in there. I'd throw McKinstry in there. I'd throw Badu in there. But in terms of like foundational players, it's basically Green and maybe Scooble.
Sadly, with the opt in, Javi Baez is part of the core, whether you like it or not, damn it.
You're right, because if he opts in, he is part of that core. It's just, but to me, Kerry Carpenter, the reason why I don't, Kerry Carpenter, if he's hitting consistently against both righties and lefties, then yes, he's part of that core. But right now, you look at him as a platoon situation right now when he gets back. Simple as that. It's to me, if it's one of those players that, a core player to me is one of those that defines a franchise that's going to be part of something that's going to be sticking around for a while. And Carpenter may be that, but right now I don't potentially see that. He's a good team. He's a good player. I'm not saying he's bad, but that's why I think of Riley. The reason why Riley Green is that is because the Tigers put a lot of draft stock in him, and he's just also, he's the straw that stirs the drink a little bit, and definitely.
Yeah, so I love Carpenter has 51 career games. It's a 117 WRC plus in 51 career games. That's pretty good for your first 51 career. But he strikes me more as a Matt Joyce type player who could be a very good strong side of the platoon outfielder for you. Matt Joyce won an All-Star or made an All-Star game once because he hit through a lot of power when he was in the game, but they didn't play him much against lefties. And I could see Carpenter being that really good complimentary piece, but not necessarily, hey, we got to lock this guy down and have to be a part of our core. But who knows? He's been getting underestimated for the last 4 years or whatever, so I don't want to put a cap on him. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see at the end of the year.
And if he proves me wrong, then he proves me wrong. I'm not afraid. Like I said, I've said this once and I'll say it again. I'm not ashamed. If I get something wrong, I get something wrong. But I just don't. If he gets on his pace for 40 home runs through his first 50 games, that sounds like
he has 10 home runs in 51 games. Which would be about 30 home runs over a full season.
Very nice.
Which would be great. Who's the last Tiger who had 30 home runs? Got to be JD, right? Maybe Miggy?
Upton?
Yeah. Upton. I think it was Upton, maybe. But
did he top 30?
Yeah. Go ahead, Yoop.
I was going to say, when they win the World Series in 2026, Riley Green is going to lead that team, okay? I don't know who else from this roster will still be there then. It could be a massive turnover. But I think it's Green and Torkelson. That's really the answer. If you want to put Colt Keith on there and with a big wish sandwich, that would be great. Scooble is a possibility if he comes back. But boy, arm injury. That's Tommy John in the past. How much stock you put in him? So really, it comes down to Green and Torkelson. As we've said all along, that Wozniak here goes, so goes them.
It's the damn chair. I've had this chair for 4 years, and it's time to get replaced. It's cracking.
Yeah, but the only thing I would add to that is, to me, the core is who do you see on this team when they're competing for a World Series? Like, when they're really competing, who can you look at on this roster right now and be like, he could be a piece to that? And I think that's what I would define. So maybe that's Mason Engler, if he could be a long reliever for them, or Langs or Foley, if they stay around.
Yeah, no, I Lang is one of the best relievers in baseball right now. And most of the time, those guys disappear after 2-3 years. Their arm just flakes away. But sometimes they stick around for a decade. Lang strikes me as a guy who doesn't quite throw enough strikes to be one of those guys, but who knows? He could be an elite closer for 3-4 years, and things move quickly. The Tigers could be a contender in 3-4 years, so sure, yeah. Throw him in there.
And I wouldn't count out Vierling or Maton. More Vierling. I think Vierling could be maybe a fourth outfield type, maybe a platoon hitter. But I think Tim and Maton are on the outside looking in, and they're going to have to prove that they can really be a part of this. But yeah, that's pretty much all I had on that. Do you guys have anything else you want to add to the core talk?
If we're going to go in the minor leagues, then if we're going to, so now you're opening up a Pandora's box here. So if you're talking about, if you're going to go, let's just do it like this. Who do you see on this team in 2026, 3 years from now?
So third base, I would say Cole Keith. Shortstop, maybe Christian Santana, but I know he has struggled this year. He'll still be under contract, yeah. Jace Jung at second, Torkelson at first, and then the outfield is really, really exciting for the future, because you're going to have Green, Badu, Parker Meadows. You're going to have the third overall pick, which is probably going to be an outfielder. You have Roberto Campos. Maybe Kerry Carpenter sticks around. So, I think this, in terms of offensively, the pitching in the minor leagues is a little questionable, but I think offensively, this team has a pretty bright future with a lot of guys that could maybe be part of the core.
I just think if we're just going to be just three or four players off the top of my head, Cole Keith, Parker Meadows, Henry Molloy, where are you going to put Henry Molloy? Because you may have to put him in the outfield. Whoever they draft at three, which is hopefully still in Cruz or Langford, either or, to me, would be fine. That's just me. Green is a part of that, too. And yeah, they do have some places and parts in place. And so it really depends also for guys like Wilmer Flores and Ty Madden. I think the second half of the year is going to be a tall tale sign of where they're going to be in the future, because the Tigers do have a pitching coach down in Lakeland who's just his only experience has been through low A or single A with Lakeland. And so he's still adjusting, still learning. And yeah, the pitching coach.
In Erie, yeah.
Yeah. I did say Erie, didn't I? Yeah, I did say Erie.
I thought you said Lakeland, sorry.
Oh, no. I say he was at Lakeland and he got promoted to Erie this year. And so he's still avoiding that stuff. He's still getting up there. But Sean throwing all these names out there. I'll be honest. Like, there's there's a few names that will make a lot of sense. I don't know if Reese Olson's one of them. Who knows? But again, you just have to look at the track record of when pitchers not staying healthy. Reese Olson, is there
this is something that Baseball America does every year, where they the top prospect in the system at every position and project them in the future lineup. And like we've seen, Torkelson and Green were top 10 prospects, top 5 prospects in baseball. And they're just kind of, Green seems to be taking that step and Torkelson's figured some things out. But it's not like, these aren't superstar like guys just yet. I would not count on Jace Jung to be the pick in the future. I wouldn't count on Christian Santana to be anything in the future. They may be, but it's so hard right now. They're so far away. They're both in A ball and not particularly tearing it up. I think Christian Santana is still hitting under 100. And Jung will have these flashes. We saw him hit a home run last Friday night. And it was like, hey, that's nice. But he also went 2-for-17 this week. And so it's just, these guys take time. Maybe they can figure things out and move up. Even Cole Keith, much as we like Cole Keith, Cole Keith's going to hit no matter what. I think I made the cap last night. He could be like a Nick Castellanos type hitter, which is, there's certainly nothing wrong with that. But Castellanos has always been a little bit volatile because he swings a lot. And there are times when the ball is just not falling. And Cole Keith is a very aggressive guy. He's not going to expand a ton, but if you can pitch to him in the zone and get him out, and that's just something that's going to happen. But I'm happy to plug him in as the third baseman of the future right now, but I'm not saying that he's going to be future all-star or anything.
Yeah, exactly. I just think it's too early to have that kind of conversation about a pitcher like, Reese Olson. Again, the rest of the list I have no problem with, but I don't know. Reese Olson carries too much of a reliever risk too, as well.
I think the whole thing when it comes down to projecting a core, if that's what you want to do, when you have a good ball club and you're going deep in the playoffs, you have a differentiation. You have your top tier of four or five guys who are your core, who are expected to carry things. And then you're going to have a bunch of guys who are along for the ride, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we talked, a lot of these guys we just mentioned might be on the next playoff team, the next contender, but they're probably along for the ride more than they're part of the core.
Yeah. And another thing too, the reason why I kind of use in terms of my history with that term is that I look at when the Tigers were trying to be, when they were trying to develop their core in the league, when Randy Smith tried every single combination of players make this core. And it was never, every year you saw this on the Detroit news, that it was never, it was, you know, at one point it was Robert Fick, Frank Catalano, Pelinato, Justin Thompson was a part of that. It never pans out. And so I always think of that. I've never really been comfortable talking about core players because the economy changes, the game, not necessarily the game, because the game rules are constantly changing, but situations change. And for example, this, when you even think about the Mets, like when the Mets were into the World Series, that young core pitchers, everybody thought about this is the core, and this is going to be the, they're going to win World Series till the next decade. It didn't happen. For me, I just live in a, just, I sound like a cynical jerk, but I when that's why it comes to prospects, I'm always kind of just, things could change. And we don't know what this regime is going to bring in. And as much as we can get excited about a lot of guys, we can, like Cole Kiefer come to mind, for example, I just try to stay in the realm of reality. And that makes, if that makes me a boring simpleton, then so be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, and there's so many things we don't know coming up too. As you mentioned, times change. We don't know what Scott Harris is going to do. And it was very interesting to listen to White Sox baseball TV this past weekend and listening to Steve Stone and Benetti, who I enjoy very much.
He's one of the best.
Yes. They're convinced that Detroit is going to spend money this winter. That's their, what they hear. That's their thought. And they make a good case. If Erod opts out, Miggy goes into retirement and Scope goes away, they have $50 million right there, boom, that they spent this year that's not ticketed next year, really. So you could do some damage with that if Chris Illich wants to spend it, which we don't know. And we don't know how Scott Harris will spend it. But yeah, so the next year could be a very volatile year with a lot of things happening. There's no question about it.
Yeah. I wouldn't bet on Hobby opting out, but who knows? We'll see. But we did have a couple of questions about Michael Lorenzen and what he could bring back in a potential trade. What are you guys thinking? And what have you seen from Lorenzen? You guys think he's been a solid pickup? Do you think he can continue this? And he's likely to be traded, I'd say, at the deadline. And what do you think the Tigers could get in return for him?
For as well as he's pitched, the peripherals are terrific. He's not striking out a ton of guys. It's kind of a more of a pitch to contact profile. He might be intriguing to a team as a potential starter who they could then throw in the bullpen in the playoffs, mm-hmm. which would maybe get him a little added value. But I think it always depends on who's buying. But he strikes me as a team that just needs an arm down the stretch that yes. they were like, okay, we need some extra innings. We'll get him. And I wouldn't expect, he's cheap. But it's a 1-year deal. I wouldn't expect anything more than like a B-minus, C-plus prospect, like somebody who's 20th in a system, something like that.
Yeah, I would agree. Because, again, Chris started to touch on where I was going to go. He would be a team that needs depth to get through September. I don't think any contender is going to target him as the guy we're going to give the ball to in game two of a playoff series. I don't think there's any chance. Very unlikely. So who's going to pay up for that? But yeah, he could be a bullpen arm for somebody and then do some damage for like a 2-inning stint in a playoff game. I could see that.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys too. I think that if the Tigers decided to make a move on, they would probably get somebody that I guarantee you it would be probably a low level prospect that they could see a lot of potential on where they see the numbers and go, oh, some people may look and go, oh, those numbers don't look well, but the Tigers might see something. So. Yeah, you're not getting really a lot. If they do, it's a lottery ticket, essentially.
you can flip it on their head. Okay, so Lawrence is 31. He's looked pretty good this year. Would you want the Tigers to sign him to an extension, a 2-year deal or a 3-year deal, and how much? And if you could answer that truthfully, then you can figure out how much he might be worth to another team.
Yeah. The only thing I would add is I'm not a GM, obviously, but I would hope that maybe they could package Lorenzen with another one of the trade ships they have, maybe a Langs or a Foley or even a Eduardo Rodriguez, and maybe with somebody get better prospect.
Look, I'm going to be a minority here and say, do not trade. You have no reason to trade Alex Lang and Jason Foley for how much years they have control left. To me, this makes no sense. If you're going to stay competitive, you want to keep those guys as long as humanly possible, unless you get a trade that's going to knock you off your feet. But honestly, those guys don't grow on trees. And I don't see what the purpose would be unless they're going to like their final year of a contract. And then maybe that. But those two have been the reason why the Tigers are staying in the game. So yeah, I think if you're going to trade E-Rod, that's one thing because he can opt out. That's one thing. But those two, Lang and Foley, I don't see no purpose in trading them at all.
I understand that, but I also understand that they once upon a time had Michael Fulmer, they never traded him. They had Matt Boyd, never traded him. When these guys' values is as high as it is right now, you want to capitalize on
them. Granted, but that was under Al Avila, and that's a different type of Al Avila. When it came to that, admittedly, waited too long. I think if Scott Harrison, they're not going to pull an Al Avila. I think Scott Harris is getting a little bit smarter than that. I think, like I said, I don't see them trading those two at all this year for any reason other than if they got some sort of extraordinary value for them. I just don't. You would piss off the fan base, and you really would tell the fan base, hey, we don't really believe in what we're doing right now as part of the part of our long-term process.
I think they're in an ideal situation with those two, though. They don't have to trade them. Right? They don't have to. They have a lot of team control. You can trade them 3 years from now. But I would definitely have a price. No question. If someone meets my price, yeah, you can have Jason Foley. What do I care? He's a setup man. I'll build a new one. If they give me a guy who I'm 50% sure will be in my major league lineup in the next year or 2 years or whatever, I probably roll the dice on that because he's a setup man. Lang, closer, ninth inning guy, and that still has some cachet in some parts. My price is probably a little higher, but still have one.
Yeah. If you don't believe the Tigers are winning or competing for a World Series in the next 2 or 3 years, I don't see a point in keeping them on this roster. And if you can get a prospect or two that you think can be an everyday regular or maybe a starter in your rotation, I don't see the point in keeping these elite relievers around on a 70-win ball club.
But like I said, unless they get something that has to not go off their feet, I just don't see that happening. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And also, you might say they may grow on trees, but I look at the Tigers farm system right now, and outside of maybe Olsen, and you don't know what you have with Brisky. You don't know the rest of it right now. Elvis Alvarado's been out pretty much the entire season. We haven't seen him that. Some of the bullpen arms in Erie and Toledo do not. Toledo right now has been a walking injury list of players that have been on the IL on and off. Erie, same thing. They just haven't had a consistency out of their bullpen at all. West Michigan, you can look at West Michigan, but there's no guarantees that those arms will be major league arms either. And maybe there's one or two tops on that roster. Forget about Lakeland. I don't even want to talk about Lakeland. Lakeland's it's in rough sled right now. But
wasteland?
It's a wasteland right now. But look, bottom line is this, and somebody said this here, if you're only going to, and Michael said it best, unless you get top 100 prospects at AA or higher that are going to be ready to go to play it and be impactful on your team, there's just no reason for me to pick them. It is just, to me, it's just, and Jordan makes, Jump Shot Jordan too also makes another point. Ren White's been kind of getting beat up. There's, the Tigers traded those guys right now for lottery picks, essentially lottery picks, but lottery cards, then it was just,
They're in a powerful position right now because, they don't have to trade them.
Right.
There's no urgency. But that's a good thing. You can turn that on teams and say, hey, you want this guy? You got to pay for it. And, the price should be pretty substantial. I'm not saying dump them. But, again, I just don't think a GM who really believes in his team-building acumen is afraid of dealing off relievers and trying to build a bullpen next year out of spare parts. I just think you can do it. Teams have proven it. But again, proof will be in the pudding this summer. We'll see what they do.
Yeah. And that's what I heard all this offseason was too, is like the bullpen is going to be in shambles. They got rid of their four best relievers and Scott Harris was able to build a bullpen. So if you trust in him and you trust in this development of pitching, I'm all for trading him. I think it's the right move.
Yeah, it always comes down to, I'd listen. I wouldn't shop aggressively, but I'd listen aggressively, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, go ahead.
Give us an offer. And if it's something that they feel like they can't refuse, then take it. But I don't think anybody's necessarily going to come knocking down their door with the offer that they really can't refuse. We'll see. It'd be pretty awesome if they did, because they'd be like, hey, that's kind of fun. They got something great for these guys. But yeah, I don't know. I was looking back through last year's trades to see if I could find something equivalent to Lorenzen. And the closest I got was Jose Quintana going from the Pirates to Cardinals. He was an expiring deal, but he went with Chris Stratton too, I think. So they got two pitchers. And in return, the Pirates got Oviedo, a younger pitcher, and Malcolm Nunez, I think.
Yeah.
Slugging corner infielder. They basically traded. They got AAA level talent, not top 100 guys, basically guys like change of scenery players. So that's probably what you get for Lorenzen this year, something along those lines. But one of the problems with the Lang and Foley deal is there just haven't been many deals where guys of that much team control and that much that's the major league level have been traded for prospects. The one we talk about is Scott Efros for Hayden Wesneski, but that's the only one I can think of.
Look, with the Pirates, they turn around and with Abelio, he's the second guy in their rotation. He's pitched not too badly this year either. And that was an example of the Pirates going over the Cardinals system, going, okay, this guy with the change of scenery would probably help him out. And they'd be able to hone in on what he does best too, and changing his pitch mix. I don't think you can't give all the credit to Scott Harris rebuilding his bullpen. You have to give credit to Chris Fetter and the organization for taking those two. Foley was already getting better last year, and same thing with Lang. Lang just walked too many people. Now he's cut back the walks. I just think you can bring in the case of Chase Reeve. Mason Eglert was a really good, talented draft pick, because they saw something down in AA Southern, and they were able to do something with it. But I feel more or less it's Fetter and company versus Scott Harris at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've added some. Tyler Holton has been pretty solid. Harris has done some decent work in the bullpen. Yeah, but two big guns were guys who have been here.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We've talked about it before. Like, I think Reese Olson could be a pretty darn good reliever down the road, given the quality of his stuff. It just needs to not throw us right down the middle. But that takes time. We'll see. I don't know. I'm enjoying the Tigers being competitive right now.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. I really did like that comparison to the Red Wings. I don't pay a ton of attention to the Red Wings. I did more during the season because I was doing the Woodward Sports stuff. Listen to those guys occasionally talk about it between mock drafts. And they would, it was fun. And then just like they had, I could see it happening where they go and play the Twins or whatever, and they have a rough series against the Twins. You go, all right, that was fun while it lasted. Now let's get some pieces for next year and keep improving these young guys. But what you don't really want to do, I don't think, is then tank your season, because that's just a bummer. And that's what happened in what you're saying with 2017?
18.
2018.
Yeah.
I guess you could do it for draft capital, if you will. You're going to get a better chance at getting a high draft pick. But we haven't really even dug into all the intricacies of baseball's draft lottery. Certain teams can't pick in the top five 2 years in a row. I think certain teams can't pick in the top 10 3 years in a row. So it might not even do any good to sell off your pieces in the bank. So I'm just holding on hope that you get Carpenter back, maybe Meadows comes back, Scoville comes back, Manning and Turbo, and then they can just keep competing deep into the season.
Yeah. I just want competitive baseball. And if they get close to the postseason, great. If they don't, it wasn't anything I expected, to be honest.
We saw the crowd, the fans are hungry for it, I think. The crowds were pretty darn good this weekend.
Yeah. Is there anything else you guys wanted to add on to?
Thing I wanted to add on, really, before we get out of here, is in terms of this week with the Rangers tomorrow and Wednesday before they go off. They go back to, they have Thursday off before they go take out Chicago. So if they can win at least one of these games against the Rangers, against a team that's, again, the one of the best teams in baseball, if not in the American League right now, the Tigers are looking at a situation where they would finish. See here, I have this pulled up real quick. In terms of schedule wise, they would have for the month, they're going to finish with a winning month, even if they lose these next couple games. So that's positive. The run scoring, like I said, you want to see that it's right now, it's 107 to 113 in terms of how many runs they've given up. So if they can, yeah, even if they won this series, that'd be fantastic. But, and some, so Detroit the Degenerate in the chat said, I saw an article on Wilson Materials for E-Rod. Given the circumstances around the pitching and catching in St. Louis, is this possible? I think there's got to be a lot more to that for that. That, to me, Wilson Contreras straight up for E-Rod. No, you just got, Tigers should ask for a hell of a lot more than that.
They just signed Contreras to a long deal, didn't they?
Yeah.
4 or 5 years they have him. So that would be an interesting one, to say the least.
Yeah. I think if anything, they would probably go for after an outfielder or something like that, like Juan Yepes or Tyler O'Neill, something like that. But no, other than that, yeah, the Tigers are sitting, they're going to be over 500 for the month of May, and that's one step in the right direction.
Keep doing that every month, and maybe you got a stew going. Yeah, I guess so. It's Fido versus Martin Perez tomorrow, and then the next game, it's to be determined, because they've talked about maybe using an opener ahead of Went to get him out of his head or help with some issues there. So I'm curious if they do that, who they would even use as the opener.
Engler?
I thought maybe Engler.
He pitched today, didn't he?
Did he pitch long?
I can't remember. You'd
just be using the guy for one inning or two inning stops, I would think. So, yeah, maybe you get two innings out of an opener and then you start Wentz in the bottom third of the order or something like that. But I don't know. I don't know if it would be Will Vest. Would it be, I don't think they'd use Foley that early, but it'll be interesting to see what they do. Because they really do need to get Wentz going or find an alternative. And really rough last, I don't know, month.
Yeah. Wentz just got to sit, figure that out. Again, if you want to check out his release point, some of the data that involved in all that, go to TigersMLReport.com. Jerry did a really good write-up on Wentz and his cutter reduction, too. He's not using the cutter as much, or it's still an effective pitch, but he hasn't used it as much. So it's interesting to see. And on that note, so we'll be wrapping up this evening. Thank you so much for watching. Watching or listening, of course, if you're listening to us, thank you for subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to the podcast. We'll be back on Thursday with the off day, maybe with a guest. Maybe I think we might have Crystal or Janice on from the White Sox side of things. Talk some White Sox and Tigers as they head down the Guaranteed Rate Field for the first time starting on Friday. And yeah, there'll also be a Tiger Money Report recap written article tomorrow coming out in the morning along with the podcast. So thank you again. Appreciate it. Thank you for tuning in. Appreciate it. And one last thing. For people, there will be a podcast dropping with this Roger Yoder book that we got here. So it's the Ultimate Major League Series. John and I got the chance to talk to another fellow Roger about this. And so there'll be a link to purchase this book if you want to buy it. It's got every single Tiger stat you can think of. This is a big book.
It's from Cobb to Cabrera, right?
Yeah, from Cobb to Cabrera. This is awesome. All right. So Tyler got in the program. So you got this. And so this is, thanks for anybody who put out the podcast for this tomorrow and the whole conversation with Roger Yoder and how it came together. So we'll talk to you Thursday. Have a good week, everybody.
Thanks again to Blood Wright and Josh.
Thank you. Thank you for-